we got a really good group of you know, high character players, and that's the main reason why we've been able to improve and do well here over the last month. So if I had a group of guys that weren't bought in and weren't high character guys, I think it would have been a lot harder. But I'm fortunate to have a good group of, you know, character players.
This is Japan Forward's Sports Look, Sports Talk Podcast. Very long-winded. We can just call it Sports Talk Podcast, to be very specific. Thursday evening in Japan, the last day of March. And we're here with a special guest this evening, Rich Glessman, head coach of the B-League's Ibaraki Bats. How are you doing tonight, Rich?
I am excellent. Yes, we are rocking and rolling here with over left to finish the season. So all is good.
Just real quickly, tell me what you've been doing during this the weekdays of this week. So since Monday, you're coming off a 94-78 home win over the Sunrockers Shibuya on Sunday. So how have you been spending your time with the team?
With the busy schedule, we had a game at Hokkaido on Wednesday, and then we had the home game Saturday and Sunday,
right,
at Tsukuba, which is convenient because I'm actually living in Tsukuba now. So after we won on Sunday, everybody just needs to take a deep breath and have a day off, and the players and the staff kind of get reloaded. And then on Tuesday, I kind of, you know, talk to one of my assistant coaches, Shogo, and we kind of get ready for the next opponent, and kind of, you know, have some staff meetings on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Players have more of like optional shooting, getting themselves ready. And then we start practicing on Wednesday and practice today. And then we'll have another practice kind of, you know, getting ready to go for Saturday and Sunday against Chiba.
Okay. Your team went 6-3 in March. So a very, very positive stretch of games there. Quality performances for the most part. How do you use that as kind of a springboard to facing the defending champion Chiba Jets now on this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, back-to-back days?
Yeah. So really just trying to install confidence while having, you know, some urgency, you know, with, you know, as a team, just understanding, like, you know, we're 7-3 in our last 10 games. And like you said, we went 6-3 in March. So from, you know, being a new B1 team and struggling to start the season with winning games, just trying to install confidence while still having that urgency, to just make sure that, you know, we're focused on all the stuff that we can control against a really talented team like Chiba.
Are you, as a coach, are you looking forward to these two games as a real measuring stick of what you might want to do against a, you know, a real quality team and a team that's been very good since the B-League started in 2016?
Yeah, you know, I am at the same time. I think it's good, you know, obviously, you know, Shibuya is a talented team, and I think beating them the previous Wednesday, and then we played them again, you know, and then, you know, we bottom line is like within a 2-week stretch, we won 2 out of 3 games against Shibuya. Mm-hmm. And that's a real good step, you know, in the direction. Now, obviously Chiba, you know, is a team that's really competing, you know, for a championship. And I do think there's a little bit of, like confidence. And also, we want to now see, we've, you know, been playing good basketball. So, you know, let's see how we stack up against one of the best teams in the league. I got to be totally honest, though. We only have nine healthy players. Uh-huh. And one of our import players is done for the season. And I can say that now because the team has released that earlier today.
I saw that.
There's a little bit of, for me as a coach, instilling confidence and, you know, having that aggressive mindset that we got to tackle whatever situation we're in. But also, hey, like, this is going to be hard. We got to fight through this together.
Mm-hmm. If I can ask you, if you're able to answer, you're referring to Mark Trasolini, a veteran forward, suffering a knee injury.
That's right.
Yep. And So for his contract is done for the season. Is there a chance the team might, you know, sign a temporary somebody else to fill his spot for the remaining 16 games?
No, unfortunately, I wish, but the deadline to sign new players has passed and gone by a few, couple weeks. So,
okay, right.
So I think it was March 14th this year. So we missed that by, you know, a decent amount. And
so we
will not. Yeah, that's not an option. We are where we are to finish the season. So
yeah. There's 16 games remaining, like we just mentioned. Other than instilling confidence, what are some other objectives you hope the team achieves between now and early May when your last game is played?
Yeah, it's a good question. This whole season, you know, one of our big focus points has just, you know, we want to get better every day. So as happy as I am with our team, that, you know, we're, like I said, we're 7-3 in our last 10 games. We're 10-9 since Christmas. So, you know, we've gotten way better from like where we started. And, you know, that's a credit to the players that we've just gotten better. We've gotten better, honestly, in every category there is. Our offense has got better. Our defense has got better. We're finishing games better. I don't want this to be the peak of our season, right? We want to keep getting better. So when we finish in May, we're at our highest peak and let the chips fall where they do. If however many wins that is, whatever the situation is, if we're at our highest peak, you know, to finish the year, I think everybody will feel really good about the season.
Okay. I think that's a fair and honest and ambitious target that you should want to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to mention briefly about the B League. We're talking about the first division, of which there are 22 teams this season, up from 20 last year. And, you know, the Ryukyu Golden Kings, based in Okinawa, are having an incredible season at 37 wins and 4 losses. And also in the West, the Shimane Susanoo Magic are 34-10. Of the Eastern teams, two of them so far have 30 or more wins. Kawasaki Brave Thunders at 32-11, and the Utsunomiya Brex at 30-13. The Chiba Jets, however, have played fewer games and have a higher winning percentage in the East with 25 wins and 7 losses. And then right behind them, the Aalborg Tokyo, who won back-to-back titles before the pandemic at 29-9. Currently, the Ibaraki Robots are at 13-29 in their first year in B1. Tell the listeners, please, Coach Glessman, what challenges are there in moving up from B2 to B1 in that first year? Differences in the competition, all new teams to scout, almost all new players, except the bulk that you brought back from your team. I think it's a pretty big challenge.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. And again, I think myself, our entire, you know, coaching staff and support staff and players, I think everybody knew it was going to be a challenge. So it's not like we got hit out of nowhere with this, right? We kind of knew this is a big jump. Like I tell, you know, some of my friends who are college coaches back home, you know, try to give me, it's hard to give an exact comparison, but it's a bigger jump than when, you know, a low major team, you know, if a team goes from like the America East to like the Colonial, like that's a little bit of a jump, but this is a significant jump where like, it's almost like a low major, mid major team jumping into like a high major league, to be honest with you. It's close to being that substantial. Now, again, there's B2 players that no doubt, whether import or Japanese, they can play in B1. There's no doubt, but there is a big significant difference with everything, right? From the overall talent, the size, the depth, the coaching, everything's at a higher level in B1. You did mention something that, you know, our team, we didn't add many new players. And, you know, that obviously a lot of people were kind of surprised by that. I think that, you know, obviously we qualified, you know, in B2 and we went 46-18 last year in B2. And We kept, you know, our core kind of group together. And I do think that helped. So there was, you know, continuity within our team. But there's no doubt that, you know, you're with the same group of guys and group of players. And now, even though we get better and, you know, a couple of the additional pieces that we signed are really good players, you know, the competition level that you're going up against is just a totally different ballgame, right, than what you went up against in B2. So I think there was some real helpful things that we did keep our kind of core group together, but also just some major challenges because, you know, we're the smallest team in B1 with the least experience. And, you know, I can keep going on and on, but I'd rather not even make excuses about it because we got a really good group of you know, high character players. And that's the main reason why we've been able to improve and do well here over the last month. So if I had a group of guys that weren't bought in and weren't high character guys, I think it would have been a lot harder. But I'm fortunate to have a good group of, you know, character players.
I'd like to bounce around a little bit between your team, your own personal coaching background, and then the league as a whole. Right now, I want to just make an observation about B1 and B2 and then get your thoughts on it, okay?
Yep.
Of the 22 teams, if you look at the standings as of today in B1, the first division of the B League, of the 22 teams, 11 have 500 or better records, so winning half or more of their games. Then you look at B2, and 8 of 14 teams have currently have winning records. Actually.
Yep.
So do you think the parity and the distribution of talent is probably about what it should be in both B1 and B2?
You know,
to make an interesting league for players, fans, coaches, media, is it about how it should be?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think with the rise of Japan basketball, I'll say this. I think, you know, whenever you're moving at a fast rate. So in my opinion, even since I've been in Japan, like Japan basketball just keeps getting better. And the B League specifically keeps getting better because the import, you know, players and the Japanese players just continue to get higher talented players. There's, you know, a lot of really good coaches, whether they're Japanese coaches or import coaches coming into the league. So as far as the best way to like set the league up, I think that's a little tricky because the bottom line is this, Ed, in the NBA, it's more equal with like a salary cap, right? And there's no salary cap, you know, if we focus it on B1, but you know, it impacts B2 too. So, you know, teams are wildly spending different money, right? And there's no like draft. So whoever comes in last the previous year, they don't get like the new best draft pick, right? You know, a lot of times it's just about, you know, money and stuff. So, do I think from a, like, if you're trying to set a league up to be the most equal as possible, do I think this is, you know, the best setup? No, I don't, because you know, some teams spend a lot more money. But that being said, the longer I'm here, what I will say is like, I think like that Alvark and Chiba and Kawasaki and Brex, they it's good for Japan for them to keep spending money and to just put pressure on other teams and, you know, be fully committed to winning championships. So, I'm not complaining about that. I think it's actually better overall, but I think, yeah, like it's not always equal and it's not always fair, to be honest with you, but also for Japan to continue moving at the rate it's going basketball wise, you need these teams who are this committed to spend this type of money.
Right. When you think of the job that you have and preparing day by day, week by week, game by game, quarter by quarter, you know, minute by minute in the heat of the moment, who are some of the coaches that you really respect and find, you know, you're really needing to match wits with them? And who are some of the better minds in the B League, the better coaching minds And maybe give a little bit of highlights about what you think make them good.
Sorry, that was my ringer there. I don't know if you heard that. I think, again, it's one of those deals where I don't want to like just single out like certain coaches, but I can, you know.
Could you mention a few?
Yeah.
That you're impressed right. with, and just maybe explain why.
Coach Dye. And the reason Coach Dye, you know, with Riku, you know, sticks out to me is because also I coached against him in, you know, B2 when he was with Sendai, and now I'm able to kind of see what he's doing, you know, with Riku. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just has a really good defensive base. Like, I think his teams are consistent. You know, you're going to get like a really good defensive effort. I mean, I describe it as like tight. Like his teams have like a tight defensive balance about them, and he's able to, you know, he did a good job with Sendai. You know, that was a team we beat in the semifinals to get to the championship, to get the B1 qualification. Mm-hmm. And now, so, you know, he did a good job with the team at Sendai over the last couple of years. And then he goes to Riku with obviously totally different situation. And they have talent, but as you said, they're to the top, like they have the best record in the league. And I think he's just done a really, really good job this year with, you know, blending new pieces together as a new coach, and just making a lot of things work where, you know, they have a lot of offensively talented players, but they consistently defend and their record shows that. So he's definitely one that sticks out. You know, Paul, who coaches at Shimane, who I also coached against, it's easier for me to highlight them because, you know, I coached against him in B2 and we've moved up to B1 together, right? But Paul, similarly, like I thought he did a really good job at Kagawa and then now at Shimane, you know, he's just really able to show, you know, he's a really good offensive coach. And I think he does a good job of holding players accountable while, you know, kind of being that like player's coach, and he's going to put a lot of pressure on you. Different coaches styles than Coach Dye, where I think Coach Dye is a little more probably, defensive, and, you know, his set offensive actions, are, you know, a little bit more, they run their actions really good, but you kind of know what's coming, where, you know, Coach Paul, allows a lot of freedom. And he has really good spacing and he's got talented players. Obviously, Ando, I think, is one of the best, you know, point guards in the league. And he just does a really good job, I think, of putting those talented players in good pieces to produce a really, really efficient offensive team.
Quickly, you mentioned Paul, who is from New Zealand, and Coach Okatani, Dai Okatani, is from Kyoto, and you're an American coach, and of course with the Alvark, Pavicevic is from the former Yugoslavia, so you have the European influences.
Yeah,
how do you think he adds something also to the mix as being a successful coach in several leagues in Europe, and you know having winning tactics with the Alvark, winning two titles there.
Yeah. Well, it speaks for itself again. You know, we played them earlier in an earlier stretch. And he's different than all these guys. And his ability to adjust with different players is just really impressive. I think, you know, when his imports have changed a little bit over the last couple of years, he can adjust and put them in a position where they can just be really good at what they do. And, you know, they're relentless with their ability to kind of attack with their 4 and 5 playing like basically off a string one another, where one guy's rolling, one guy's popping, looking into high low, getting into like fast, I call it like follow ball screen, where either they're 4 or 5, you know, pulls on the perimeter, and then you just whip it into that opposite guard wing and get into the naked side ball screen. Sometimes it's easy for coaches to always be like, oh, you know, Luca, has all this talent, but I'm going to be honest with you. Sometimes when you have a lot of talent, there's headaches that go with that. And there's pressure that goes with that. So sure. I think he does a good job of taking everything with the talent that he has to, consistently do a really good job. And he won two titles, like you said, before the pandemic. And then last year they weren't as good. And he's, made some adjustments with the roster. And now their team, they have a chance to win it all this year. There's no doubt in my mind.
Absolutely. Got a difficult question here for you, if you're able to answer it.
Yep.
How would you say COVID-19 has impacted how you coach, how you prepare for practices, and then, prepare for games these past couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think one thing that's definitely, especially last year, one thing it did make me, and I talked to players and other coaches about this, is it made me appreciate what we have. A lot of my friends, especially the guys who coached at like smaller level colleges last year, they mm-hmm. had like their seasons like canceled and they weren't even able to have a normal year. And although last year, like for us, it wasn't normal. Like that was the best, coaching year I've ever had, with taking, Ibaraki Robots to B1. And it was awesome. And you saw that, like, it can easily be taken away from you. Right. So the year before, we weren't able to finish the season. Right. So right. I appreciated everything that COVID, with the year that we had last year and the year we're having now. Like, the one thing that I say with COVID is it makes you appreciate what you have. But at the same time, there's, we just had a player test positive yesterday, and he's one of our better, players, and he's out for the next 2 weeks. So you gotta roll with things like day to day. I think coaches will tell you, coaches, we like to have everything like set and planned, and so we can kind of like control the chessboard, but mm-hmm. that's not how COVID-19 doesn't let you control the chessboard. You gotta be able to deal with things like day to day. And I think you appreciate that, hey, it is what it is, and we just gotta roll with the punches. And if player X tests is, positive, we got to support player X, but we also have to then deal with playing our next game, our next 2 weeks without him. And
right.
you can't complain about it. You can't make excuses about it. You just got to move on.
Let me switch the topic to your coaching career for a couple moments here. First of all, you played college ball, finishing your college ball at Emerson College, yes. In Massachusetts as a point guard or a guard, right?
Yes, many years ago.
How did that help prepare you to become a coach? And then tell me a little bit about the benefits of your coaching travels, your path, going from Division III as a women's head coach to working in Division II and Division I programs at Adelphia University in Division II. At Long Island University in Division I, and then at Duquesne University in Division I, before you arrived at Ehime with the B2's Ehime Orange Vikings in 2017.
Yeah, so I played, had a great college Division III experience. I was at a good Emerson, the Division III program that I played for. I wouldn't change that experience for anything. I had a great relationship with my teammates, my head coach, guy whose name is Hank Smith, who now works for the Oklahoma City Thunder. My experience was so good. I tell people, like, I actually wasn't sure I was going to be, involved in basketball or a coach mm-hmm. while I was in college. But the experience that I had, when I got out of it, I was like, oh, you know what? I want to keep doing that. I want to keep being part of a basketball team. And, I was a good Division III player, but I wasn't good enough to keep playing professionally. So then it was like, okay, well, if I can't, keep playing professionally, why not be a coach? Right. So,
and you were the youngest women's, the youngest division or NCAA coach in the country at that one point, right? When you started at Wheelock College?
Yeah. So that's a funny story too. I helped out a little bit with the women's team at my alma mater as I was finishing up at Emerson. And then just coincidentally, the next year before I was even in coaching, it was kind of one of those deals, like a friend of a friend, or I don't even remember how, but like they needed a coach with like 4 days before the season started. So I showed up at like 22 years old but you know, again, like that, you know, it was a good experience because I had no idea what I was doing and I had no idea what I was getting into. And that kind of like set the bar where like, all right, if you want to like do this full time here, you know, you got to go somewhere under a really good coach and, you know, kind of, you know, move up the ladder that way. And that's what I did. And so I went to Adelphi, you know, after that and worked for a really good Division II head coach, a guy by the name of Jamie Cosgrove, who's a stud defensive coach. And then from there, I went to LIU Brooklyn. And I was with, you know, Jim Ferry, who's a great coach. So I had three really influential people that I played for and worked with that helped me, yeah, become, you know, the coach that I was able to become.
And what do you think are your strengths as a head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, like offensively, I try to allow a lot of freedom for our players to put them in the best position to make plays and, you know, play it like a high speed of attack, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think from the outside, people would, you know, outside and inside, probably people would say, you know, that's one of my, you know, strengths. And I think, you know, the older that you get, you know, it's important to kind of know what your strengths are and, you know what the things that you, your weaknesses and the stuff that you have to be better at, you know? So even like this year, although B1, like the defenses are just way more efficient and better. And you know, we have some disadvantages. We're able to, you know, for the most part, I think compete while still playing like with our offensive speed of attack, and especially the last half of the year. At the beginning, I was kind of even questioning not myself, but just, you know what, like we might not be able to play the style that I want this season, but we kind of stuck with it. And, you know, since the second, you know, half of the year, the last couple months, like I said, we're 10-9 and, you know, we're playing at like the offensive speed of attack that, you know, kind of I played in Ehime and played with the Robots last year.
Do you think going through the second half of the season, your own adjustments for game plan and practice, you know, like the structure of practice is really tied to maybe also being able to understand how you want your team to scout other teams a little bit differently? Maybe that's gotten a little easier by being around more of the teams.
You know, possibly. And I think part of it too is just that I think, yeah, it's like anything else. When you get more familiar with the teams that you're going up against, you know, it's always helpful. There's no doubt. But I think honestly, like I got to give like the players more credit on that, because I think part of it too is like, you know, we have a lot of guys who have never played in this level, right? In B1. Mm-hmm. And right. They've done a good job over the last couple of months. As you know, to be honest with you, it helps us that the B1 season is so long, 60 right. games, early October to early May. So we have a lot of time. We have a lot of time to figure it out. Now, at the beginning of the year, I was worried that, oh, geez, the season's too long. But how it's gone, it's been helpful for us that the season is long, because I do think the players, you know, have done a really good job of like, as time goes on, seeing kind of like what works. Okay, you know what, like, well, you know, one player I have, you know, Kohei Fukuzawa, who's one of the best shooters I've ever been around. You know, he's able to find his shots better. He's getting more comfort threes than he was earlier on in the year, and we're doing a better job helping him get those shots. But he's also just understanding angles and, you know, the fact that, you know, he has to potentially shoot deeper or shoot quicker, and what, you know, specific actions help him get shots, you know. So I think rather than like practice and my adjustments, I think the players, the longer and more games they've played in B1, they've just gotten more confident and they've adjusted, to be honest with you.
Okay. Did you have time for a few more questions, Coach?
Yes, of course.
We're roughly at about 30 minutes, but this is our first of these Twitter Space podcasts for Sports Talk. So maybe we can go a little bit longer this time and see how it goes.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure being number one, right?
Yeah. Let's rewind for a minute and think back to your arrival in Ehime with the Orange Vikings in 2017. What was that first season like being an overseas coach, needing to work with a translator for day-to-day life and for, you know, interaction with players and making the game plans and everything else? How did that experience differ in your mind from being a college coach in the States?
Yeah, you know, that year, I got to be honest, that year, I'm never going to have another year like that in my life again, probably, because every other year you come back to Japan, you know what to expect. So The bottom line is, like, when I left for Japan, specifically, like you said, you know, Matsuyama, Ehime, I had no idea like what I was getting into, like good, bad, indifferent. I had no idea. I had never been to Asia like before in my life. Right. So
let's pull up for 1 second. Sorry. Yeah. Did you get hired over the phone or did you meet the, you know, team management in the States? How did that come about?
You know, that's a good question. So, I from a friend of a friend, I connected with Toshi Koga, an agent here. And he told me about this opportunity, but then like nothing happened for like a couple weeks. And okay. So I just assumed that, like, you know, that ship had sailed, right? So that then, like, you know, on a random, you know, night while I'm like with my wife and two young sons, he messaged me like, "Hey, you still interested in Japan? You know, this team, Ehime Orange Vikings, they need a coach." And I said, "Yeah, I would be interested." And then he must have talked to them like that day or the next day or whatever. Because then the next day he hit me with like the contract details. Okay. And I talked to my wife and that was it. So we were ready to roll after that.
But like you said, the experience of coming here, you really didn't know what to expect because you hadn't been in Asia. You hadn't been in Matsuyama or been to a B League game. Do you think it's really helped you grow as a coach coming to a completely unknown environment?
Yes. No question. And I would really, again, it's easier said than done. A lot of coaches aren't either able to get a job or they have families. They can't do it. I would recommend every coach it doesn't even have to be basketball, but if they could ever, just even for 1 year, like, you know, go in have an international coaching experience, I can't tell you how much I recommend that because it's going to help them be more flexible, learn about communication. For me, it was, you know, life changing. And obviously, like, you know, my wife likes Japan, and I think I didn't come to Japan just by accident. Like, I decided I wanted to, you know, focus on coming to Japan because I knew basketball wise that they were putting money in. They had a new league. They were putting money into it, that the league in the country in general were on the rise. Like, I knew that I wanted to try to go to a place that wasn't going down, that was going on the upswing. And Japan stuck out to me that it was really going on the upswing. And, you know, and then to be honest with you, though, like, I was fortunate because, as you know, Ed, like, a lot of coaches come over here in, like, impossible situations and they get fired and then they can't get another job, right? And
right. One shot only.
One shot. And so, you know, we had a good year, the first year at Ehime. So then I could stay, then I could come back after the first year. And I had a couple, Toshi, was my captain there, Tate, like I had really good, Japanese guys who helped me out a lot. Shea Tapscott was, who I coach now, was one of the imports, So I had nothing to do with putting the team together. I got lucky with the guys that were there. And, you know, I think that's a big part of it. It really is. I mean, a lot of good coaches, you know, can come over here and they get into a bad situation and it's a reflection on them where, you know, you gotta make the best use of every opportunity you have. But I will say, you know, some jobs are harder than others over here, right?
Would you characterize your work as being do you feel you've had pretty good relationships with the front offices, both in Ehime Bay and with Ibaraki, you know, in dealing with the general manager and owners?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, it's communication based, you know. Mm-hmm. Yuhura-san was my GM last year, and he was just awesome. I mean, you know, it's easy to focus on the coach, the players. Yuhura-san, who in Hori-san and Yamiya-san too, like, it was, I came at a good time because they had been working together for a while, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, it starts with the owner. Hori-san, the owner of the robots, is a really good owner. And then he had a good president with Yamiya-san. And then the GM, Yuhura-san, who was, you know, around the team and me and stuff. And just really good, just a really good guy. And he did a great job putting the team together. So that made it, you know, really special too with what we did last year. And Yamiya-san and Yuhura-san have moved on to different jobs. And, you know, now we have a new president, GM, who are good as well. So with Ehime, I'll say this, with Ehime, it was very different. I would compare it like the robots, especially now being in B1, like we have, you know, a lot of staff. We have, I know we don't have as big of an operation as a lot of other B1 teams, but we have a lot of staff and resources. Ehime wasn't like that. Right. It was, Ehime was like more small college style.
Right.
You know, where the robots in B1 are more like big brand, you know, college basketball. So,
well, let's talk about that a little bit from the standpoint of the team is sort of a big fish in a small pond, so to speak, or like the big show in town among sports. What is the general vibe around the team, like in the community? People know the name, people know the team, right?
Yeah. And again, that starts with Hori-san. So Hori-san, the robots were nothing. I wasn't here, but so this is what, you know, everything, you know, they were a struggling franchise that probably wasn't going to last too much longer. And Hori-san, you know, bought the team and, with his Globus, you know, the business that he's built from the ground up with Globus and stuff, and he's from Ibaraki, from Mito specifically, and, you know, he then they built a brand new arena, Adestria arena in the center of Mito, and that was a huge help. And that's really what kickstarted it. And the community is behind the team. And obviously with going from B2 to B1 this year, it's exciting. I think obviously the community wants the robots to stay in B1. But you're right. Like, definitely, because there's not other sports teams at this level, like in around the Mito area. The robots obviously are a big deal to people. And, you know, we take that very, very serious, that, you know, we want to represent, you know, Ibaraki and Mito in the best way possible.
I believe, just as a, going back to your point about the owner, Hori-san, I believe he bought the team in either 2013 or 2014. I think it's been 7-8 years now. Maybe it's a little bit shorter. I don't have that figure in front of me, but definitely knowing the history of the franchise before, economically, it has been stabilized and there's more continuity and there was investment made. Again, importantly, the arena was built.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Briefly here, Coach, can you highlight a few of the players that you believe are the best all-around players in the B League? And then can you talk about your roster and who are some of the most exciting players on your team?
Yeah, no, I mean, Like, again, I don't want to just always like name like the guys that everybody knows, but you know, obviously like the players in the league and I've seen video footage and talk to people. And, you know, again, that's kind of what I was saying before, where having Japan being on the upswing, like, you know, the Japanese players just have gotten a lot better, you know, and it's obviously it starts with Hachimura and Watanabe, but like, you know, there's some other guards now in the B League that are just really talented players. You know, I mean, we're going up against one of them this weekend, right, with Togashi.
You know, what makes him tough?
Just how quick he is, how he can shoot, pass, dribble with the speed that he plays with. So obviously he's smaller, but he uses his speed at just a really high level. So, you know, when he's using a ball screen, he can shoot, so you can't play off him. So you got to guard him tight, but he's so crafty with the ball, right? It's kind of like that Chris Paul thing where you can't play off him because he can shoot, but he's really crafty with the ball in his hands. So, you know, offensively, he really makes Chiba go, despite, you know, they have awesome players playing around him. You know, he does stick out as, you know, one of the more talented guards in the league. But, you know, Ando for Shimane is just really impressive. Hajima, you know, with Brex, I just think is just a really impressive, you know, player. And these are guys who, you know, can do a lot of different things on the court. They're not one dimensional players. That really kind of sticks out to me, where they can score, they can pass, they can really help their team win in a variety of ways.
Looking at your roster and your team, who are, just for people to give them a kind of an introduction to your team, who are some of your better players? And is there a player or two that has really made a mark, you know, most improved player or most improved players since training camp began?
Yeah, there is one guy, but I'll kind of go through, you know, positionally, just to quickly here give listeners an update. So Atsu Hiro is our captain. I thought he was one of the best guards in B2 last year. I think he's been a B1 player, and he's kind of proving that now. He's had a good year. He got hurt in the middle of the year, but he's our, you know, captain, starting point guard, guy who can, you know, use his speed to score while also getting guys shots. I'm lucky to have, you know, coached him now 2 years. Kohei Fukuzawa is, he's only about, I think he's listed at 177 centimeters. I don't know if he's that tall, but he at one point had the most threes in the history of the B League. I don't know where it's at right now, but just one of the best shooters I've ever seen. And like I mentioned before, he's kind of now finding his way to just be able to shoot. You know, he's having games. He had 30 against Kawasaki. He had 20, I think he had 28. Against Kyoto a couple weeks ago. I mean, he can score in bunches. So, and then Asahi Tajima, who's a veteran, who had played with Hokkaido for the previous, I think, 7 years. You know, just a lot of B1 experience, right, that we don't have in other positions. So I usually play the, you know, the three of those guys, you know, together as like the one and two. And I kind of don't have a set point guard a lot of times. You know, we'll play the two of those guys, two of those three players as kind of like combo guards.
Right.
So, yeah, the player that I would say when you asked about most improved is Suru. Suru, I think, leads us in minutes over the last couple months, and he is our leader in plus minus, which, you know, just says a lot. And he averaged, I think, like he ended up starting at the end of last year in with our B2 season, but Surumaki, like he only averaged, I think, like 12 minutes a game last year, because he wasn't playing a lot early in the year, but he just kept working. And I mean, now at times it's hard for me to take him off the floor. And he is a high level defender, and he's just improved his shooting. He's improved his decision making. He has improved his free throw rate. He's improved at everything going from B2 to B1. So
do you use him as kind of a swing man?
Yeah, I do. But you know what? Like, it's kind of, I'm to the point, I said this to, you know, some of my assistant coaches recently, like, it's almost like I still think of him sometimes too much as like a wing. Like, he's got some like big guard skills now where I gotta kind of like sometimes, you know, put him in more of a position to run a play for him or use a ball screen. And he's just emerged with his ability to create. So I think I would say he's like, you know, a three or a swingman, whatever you say. But again, trying to give the players freedom, like, I have no problem with him with the ball in his hands making a play. So, you know, he again, like, from any player that I've coached in Japan and America at the collegiate level, some guys can make big jumps, right, from their freshman to sophomore year, no doubt. But like, Suru's really made a huge, huge jump in the last year. And that's a credit to him. It's a credit to him.
And he's still only 25 years old. He'll turn 26 in April.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So he's got a bright future. If he keeps going at this rate, he's going to make a lot of money.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And then, you know, our we have, you know, some depth with, you know, some guys who were on the roster last year. I'm kind of just giving you like the guys who play the most minutes, because that's probably who fans want to hear about. You know, our import players who now are here are Shea Tapscott, who was, you know, played B2. This is his first year in B1. And, you know, he was struggling a little bit to start the season, but he's been dynamite the last month or so. He had 34-9-6 against Shibuya on Sunday. And yeah, I mean, he's figuring out. I mean, his size at times is an issue in B1. But he can just score. He's always been able to score. And I think he's one of those guys that he's starting to show people that, you know, sometimes labeling somebody just as a B2 player, if they're in the right situation, they can, you know, contribute, you know, at the B1 level. And then Eric Jacobson is our other, you know, import, who's just been awesome recently. He's one of those guys that, you know, his stat, you might look at his stats and, you know, he's got, you know, he had 15-8, but it doesn't tell the true tale of like how impactful he was in the game, with his screening, with his, you know, one-on-one defense in the post, his ability to run the floor, to roll hard on ball screens and open up the floor for other players. He's really taken his game to another level since January, February. And he was hurt earlier in the year. He had a knee and an ankle issue, so it took him a little time to get going. But he's really, again, he's really, I think, shown he's a B1 player since January. That's, and again, I'm obviously, I'm their coach, so I'm partial to these guys. But I if anybody watched Eric play recently, he's playing against, you know, high level players, and he is at times, you know, getting the best of them. So that to me shows that he can, you know, play at this level.
You speak about high level players, and there are several former NBA players in this league. And, yep, you know, even players like Sebastian Saiz of the Alvarc, who has played for the Spain national team in recent years, you know, very good, yep, quality international players.
Absolutely. High level. I mean, you know, I the Sunrise, they have technically four. They have, is out for this, he's still on their roster. And so, you know, you got four guys on their roster with NBA experience. I mean, that's saying a lot, right? With Ryan Kelly, McAdoo, Harrelson, and Kevin Jones, who they just signed, you know, it shows, you know, the level that, you know, these teams just talent. And like you said, Sebastian Saez is one of the best imports in the league. And yeah, he doesn't have NBA experience, but his international experience, you know, speaks volumes. And, you know, he's hands down one of the best forwards in the league.
One final question here, Coach. You grew up in Massachusetts, and I'm guessing you were probably a Celtics fan growing up.
I was.
If so, who was your favorite player on Boston as a kid?
Yeah, so my grandfather, former Boston cop, I had no choice but to wear green on and whenever the Celtics were in the playoffs, everyone wore green, and my grandfather was going to be in a bad mood if the Celtics didn't win. So I had no choice but to bleed green with the Celtics. You know, it has to be Larry Bird. Bird was an icon, you know, so I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 78. So I was young when Bird was like really in his heyday. But he still had a big like presence, you know, in my house and everybody who was in the Boston area. It's hard to go past Larry Bird, in my childhood, but you know, Dennis Johnson, Ainge, Robert Parrish and McHale, they were all, you know, very, very present, in my childhood as I would, you know, watch games with my grandfather growing up. So, it was an awesome time.
That must have been fun to share those memories with your grandfather.
It was. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to encourage listeners to check out the Ibaraki Robots games and game highlights. If you're in Japan, go to the arena, go to their games, watch their YouTube highlights as well to get familiar with them. And yes. I want to thank you, Coach Glessman, for being on our program tonight.
Ed, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And again, thank you for all the stuff that you're doing for the B-League. Again, you're definitely one of the pioneers and the guys that, you know, is helping just, you know, in the media get it out how good the B-League is. And, you know, I appreciate it.
Thank you for your patience tonight and getting started. But I appreciate the thoroughness of our interview. And please follow coverage of the B-League at Sports Look and Japan Forward.